Welcome in to another PFF grade release show. Max Chadwick alongside Dalton Wasman here, breaking down all four of the first round college football playoff games, revealing all of the PFF grades from those first four games, going over the stat that told the story in all four games, and also the most impressive part of all four games. And Dalton, unfortunately, none of these four games were very close, but I still feel like we learned a lot about some of the playoff teams we saw.
I think we learned plenty. I don't have any issue with the way the weekend went, honestly, and I think we have to remember that at all levels of football, from Pee Wee all the way up to the NFL, the first round of playoffs, this can happen.
Yeah.
This can happen. And honestly, the better team won all four games, and the idea of this expanded playoff structure to me is not all we want to find out is on the field instead of hypothetically who the better teams are. I think the four teams that won these games just prove that they're the better team, and they're among the eight best teams in the country. So structurally, I have no issue with the way anything went this weekend. It's just that people, I guess, weren't as entertained as they wanted to be.
So what you're saying is you don't want to go back to the 90s when they just chose the national champion.
No, I'm good on that. Okay. That seems asinine to me.
Okay.
Where we just
did, just want to make sure, because there's a lot of takes going on Twitter yesterday about what everyone wanted out of college football.
That's always funny to me, because I guess I'm newer to college football than a lot of other people who have done this for a lot longer. But for the fact that for 100 years we just had a group of people just choose the national champion, that always amazed me. That at no other level of college football, the lower levels, do they even do that. They've always they've had playoffs and things like that.
Way bigger playoffs, too.
Yeah.
This is by far the smallest playoff that we have out of any level.
There's 24s and 32s sitting out there.
Absolutely.
So, you know, no, I'm all for it. Look, I think the teams, I'm still in the boat that the 12 teams they picked were the right 12 teams. And some half of them went out there and got beat, and the other half proved they were better. That's what football is. It's not about, you know, at this stage of it, having the most entertaining games of all time. Would that be nice? Sure, absolutely. Yeah. But I think you're right. We learned enough, and we're going to have a great quarterfinal coming up.
The college football playoff, whenever the games happen every single year, it's always an insane day on Twitter, because it's always like some people are talking about the game and what's going on in the game, and a lot of people are having like existential crisis about college football, like how everything needs to change in college football because of this one game.
Well, realistically, the selection process was what, 2-3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
And we're still
talking
screaming about it. I mean, we're here now, just watch the games.
I love how everyone was complaining about Indiana getting in, SMU getting in, and then all of a sudden Tennessee gets blown out and everyone's quiet. And we're like, oh, that team should have been in, and they got blown out too. So
they all should
listen.
Have been,
they all should have been there.
They
that's what I'm saying. Exactly.
They all deserve to be where they are, and the way they play, they all deserve to lose. So that's okay.
All right, we're not doing a whole show, obviously, on the state of college football. I think college football is doing just okay right now. Obviously, there's some changes that need to be made in the future, but we'll get to that when it happens. But let's talk about these games. And before we do that, we got to talk about PFF Plus, because we're breaking down a lot of advanced stats that you cannot find anywhere else right now. And if you want to look at those stats yourself, you can get it with a PFF Plus subscription, access to all of college football grades and advanced stats, all of NFL grades and advanced stats as well. Get access to our PFF 2025 NFL mock draft simulator. You could draft a full 7 rounds for your favorite team, or all 32 NFL teams if you want, as well. You could trade players and trade picks in that mock draft simulator. Of course, access to the best fantasy tools on the planet right now. I know kind of the fantasy championships are going on right now. I unfortunately am not part of it because my fantasy team sucked this year. But the PFF Fantasy Tools help you to win championships in your league as well. So, again, check it out at subscribe.pff.com for your PFF Plus subscription today, because it is the best in the planet, in my opinion. All right, let's go over to the first game we're talking about. We're going to talk about these games in order, basically, of how they happened. The game that we went to, Notre Dame beating Indiana 27-17. Notre Dame now moving on to play number 2 Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. But let's go over these PFF grades first, starting off with the Fighting Irish. And, of course, the highest graded player, running back Jeremiah Love, with an 80.6 grade against Indiana. Drake Bowen, 80.4 grade, the linebacker. Cornerback Leonard Moore, 76.4. Wide receiver Jordan Faison, 76.3. Offensive tackle Emil Wagner, 71.8. And quarterback Riley Leonard with a 76.2 grade. Now let's go to Indiana with their highest graded players in their 10-point loss. Defensive tackle CJ West with an 81.4 grade. Wide receiver Miles Price, 76.6. Offensive tackle Carter Smith, 70.9. Wide receiver Elijah Surratt, 69.7. Linebacker Jalen Walker, 67.6. And quarterback Curtis Rourke with a 55.9. 0.1 grade. Dolan, for you, the stat that told the story in this Notre Dame victory.
I think Kurt Cignetti put it best after the game in that Notre Dame was just a little bit stronger and a little bit faster than Indiana was. That makes sense. That's the biggest concern, right? They're considered to be the more talented team despite the success Indiana had this season. I think the stat for me, 22 missed tackles. Easily the worst tackling day that Indiana had all season. 179 rushing yards after contact for Notre Dame in this game. The most Indiana had allowed previously was 119 to Ohio State. It was by far their worst day tackling, their worst day giving up yards after contact, 5.6 yards after contact for Notre Dame in this game per rush. For a reference there, okay, Ashton Ginty for the season, who leads the nation in yards after contact per attempt,
leads all time yards after
all
contact.
All time, yeah. Is 5.5. They basically played an entire game where they allowed yards after contact like they were playing against Ashton Ginty, okay? And this wasn't about getting dominated in the trenches. They only gave up 0.4 yards before contact per attempt, and that's a stat that Indiana leads the nation in this year. The way that their defensive line played wasn't bad. The way that they fit the run, it's just that they just didn't tackle in the open field. Jeremiah Love's just a monster to tackle. Oh. I mean, even more so, I know everyone's going to remember the 98-yard run, but I can remember a play, I think it was 2nd and 6, where there's a run up the middle out of shotgun. The fit shut it down. He had nowhere to go. He bounces to the outside, breaks 3 tackles, and gets down the sideline for the first down anyway. That's pretty much exactly what I'm talking about here, is that Indiana, I don't think on the defensive side, at least, they played a bad game in the trenches. Couldn't make tackles in open space. Jeremiah Love has proven he's one of the hardest guys to tackle in college football, whether it was him or Jadarian Price or Riley Leonard or any of the receivers. Indiana, just a level of physicality in both the Ohio State game and now especially in this game that they just couldn't quite handle. And I think Kurt Cignetti was right that his defense kept fighting. Actually, there was a stretch in the second half of this game that I was really impressed with the way that they just kept holding Notre Dame to field goals or holding them out of the end zone, and they just kept battling even though their offense, as you're going to get to, really didn't give them a chance to win for the second time this year. But that's really what it was for me on at least that side of the ball. Notre Dame just being a little more physical, especially the ball carriers.
And I think I was really impressed by Indiana not quitting, because I think it was, 27-3 at one point in this game, and obviously ended up being 27-17. They had a furious comeback at the end. It would have been so easy for so many teams to just roll over and die, and you just saw Indiana keep fighting until the final whistle, which I think speaks to the culture that Kurt Cignetti has going there. We'll shout him out a little bit later on in the show, too. But my stat that told the story, though, Curtis Rourke against man coverage, 45.7 passing grade. Against man coverage, 13 for 23, 140 yards, a touchdown and an interception. He had one big-time throw, 2 turnover-worthy plays, a 59.1% adjusted completion rate, and Notre Dame played man coverage almost the entire game. They played man coverage on 66% of his dropbacks in this game. For reference, Riley Leonard faced man coverage on 5% of his dropbacks, because Indiana, obviously a very zone-heavy team. They ran zone the entire game, and it did not work against Riley Leonard. But for Curtis Rourke, though, he just was not good enough against man coverage. And also, Dolan, usually man coverage is paired with a blitz. And when it was paired with a blitz in this game, we had man coverage and Notre Dame blitzed Curtis Rourke. He had a 37.2 passing grade, and he went 3 for 9 for 34 yards. We know this Notre Dame secondary is elite. And now they know that, too, and I think a lot of other teams are noticing it, too. They can just play one-on-one, single coverage. They don't need to worry about playing zone coverage. They can just it looked like they were running the routes better than Indiana's receivers were at times, honestly, in that game. And I think they just dare Curtis Rourke to make tight throws into tight coverage. And with that blitz is getting home as well, I just really think Curtis Rourke just was not good enough against man coverage. I don't think the receivers were good enough against man coverage. And the offensive line couldn't hold up against the blitzes once again. It just was a perfect game plan, I think, for Marcus Freeman on defense.
It was. It's all the things you're concerned about with Indiana as an offense, is that they have a good receiving core, but it's not exactly loaded with speed. And you mentioned the blitz pickups. That's something we talked about all week. Okay, well, if you heavily blitz Indiana, that's when they struggle. They can pass protect against a 4-man rush, and I think there were times they did that in this game. But when they got blitzed, whether it be against Michigan or Ohio State or Notre Dame, that was the biggest problem in pass protection. I think there were times early in this game where they were chucking up go balls and back shoulders to the outside, and that's generally not where Indiana lives as an offense. And I think the defensive look, all the cover one you're seeing, generally tells you, yeah, that's the way to go. But when you have a team as good in man coverage as Notre Dame is, that's just not going to work, right? And we see Leonard Moore and Christian Gray on the outside, and you have Xavier Watts flying around at safety, picking balls off and getting to the football. And I mean, I'll tell you what, I thought Xavier Watts played a great game too.
Unreal.
Free safety.
Yeah.
And I think it helps when you're playing all that cover one to have a safety with that much range and that good at ball skills. That's it's the perfect storm of, we are one of the few teams in the country with the ability to play man coverage half the time, right? Cover one, I think it's half the time on the season. I believe it might be, if it's not the highest rate in the country, it's in the top three. Just a really good game plan by Marcus Freeman. They stopped the run up front as well. They did a really good job with that, especially early in the game. And I think the part of this for Indiana, and I don't think they should feel bad about it, we just got two games where they maxed out on offense. It's a level that they couldn't hit just because they didn't have enough talent. And I think if you're Kurt Cignetti, there's nothing not to be proud of here.
No.
I think, look, everybody and their mother knew going into the season, during the season, even at this point, Indiana wasn't winning a national title. We know this. Yeah, I even picked him to win this game, and I probably wouldn't have picked him to beat Georgia, honestly.
Yeah.
He squeezed every last bit of juice he could out of this team. And I don't think there's any issue with that. The fact that he could do that at a school like Indiana and get to the top 12 and get to this spot and have his defense play the way they did for a while in this game and just offensively, once you hit that level and your team hits the limit on its level of talent, it is what it is. I don't think anybody needs to be sitting here calling Indiana frauds. I think Kurt Cignetti darn well deserved to win Coach of the Year for getting a bunch of James Madison guys and a quarterback from Ohio to the college football playoff. It's an incredible job, and I think just in these two games that they lost, they hit their limit, and that's okay. I think that's all you can ask for. Now they know the standard. Now they know where they need to get to, and if they want to prove to all the people that they're not frauds and whatever stupid things they're calling them on the internet, come back and have another great season next year, and I don't have any issue with that.
Yeah, okay. I want to shout out Kurt Cignetti as well. I think there's a lot of revisionist history going on Twitter during that game, just saying, oh, this is your coach of the year, all that. Yeah, he's your coach of the year. Yeah, I have absolutely no problem with
this. This is the Indiana Hoosiers.
I literally tweeted, Dawn. I said, we are clowning. Just to remind people, we are clowning Indiana for losing to Notre Dame in the college football playoff. Say that out loud and then think about whether or not you want to tweet about Indiana and how embarrassing it was for them. The fact that they're even here is ridiculous. They went 3-9 last year. It's the most wins they've ever had in a single season. I don't believe they've ever had 10 wins in a season, right? I don't think so either. So
no.
It's insane what he did in 1 year at Indiana. And yeah, listen, there are some fourth down calls I didn't agree with, right? He did not coach a perfect game at all. But at the same time, it's Indiana going against Notre Dame in the college football playoff in South Bend as well. And they lost by 10 points. This is the closest game I think we had of any of these games. I don't know what we're trying to clown Kurt Cignetti for. I think so many people on Twitter treat college football like the NFL, where they think, oh, everyone's created equal. Everyone has the same salary cap. Everyone has the same draft picks, everything. It's not that, guys. It's not that at all. Those two programs, the gap in resources of those two programs is massive. It really is. So I know Indiana, you know, they have a lot of money in their athletic department, but not a lot of it goes to football a lot of times. So just the fact that we're clowning a program that has historically been one of the worst in the Power Four all time against historically maybe the greatest program in college football history, what are we talking about right now? So I thought there was a lot of revisionist history going on, you know, clowning Kurt Cignetti in that game. Because I thought
two goals for every first-year coach. Establish a culture, bring in talent.
Yep.
He did both of those things and a whole lot more.
Yeah.
The fact that if they went 8-4 this year, we would, and made a bowl game, we would have sat here and said, what a wildly successful year for Indiana. The fact that they got to this point.
11-2, yeah.
Yeah, there is absolutely no reason, there's no reason to shame them for that. They had the greatest season in school history, and they absolutely deserve to be where they are. And how many teams do we see in every sport every year? Get into the first round, face a team better than them, get beat, move on. It's part of the process. Championships are not won. Championships are won. When they're won, it's a multi-year process. It's not. You know how few teams in the history of not just football but any sport go and win the whole thing on their first run? Almost none of them. Mahomes didn't even do it.
Yeah.
I mean, the only guy that really did it was Tom Brady, and even for that Patriots team, they had lost the Super Bowl to the Packers with Drew Bledsoe, and it was the core of that team and all that, and Brady just kind of put them over the top and had the game winning. Like, it's not a thing where on your first time there, you're going to win the whole thing. It's not how that works. Hell, ask Georgia. How many years of pain did Georgia have before they started winning them now?
Mm-hmm.
Clemson, forever. I mean, even Saban had to get that thing off the ground at Alabama. There's no shame in any. Look, did they lose? They lost. Yeah, Notre Dame proved they were the better team. They're one of the 8 best teams in the country. Doesn't mean the committee got it wrong. The process was correct. I don't care that you weren't that entertained by it. The process was correct.
So they're right now number 8. We think they'll stay at least above, say, 11th or better, right, in the final ranking, AP ranking probably. So, yeah, so if that happens, I just want to say that.
Yes, I don't much care what the AP thinks after that's why we play them on the field.
Listen, I'm just saying because in 2020 they finished number 12. Since then, they've had 3 times they finished in the top 25 since 1967. They were going to have their highest ranking in a postseason poll since 1967 when they finished 4th in the country.
There we go.
So only three times since 1967 have they finished the year ranked. And we're clowning this program for losing in the college football playoff. Okay. Let's get back to Notre Dame, though. The most impressive part of the victory, because obviously it was a very impressive performance by the Fighting Irish, Dolan. Most impressive part for Notre Dame in this win.
That man coverage you pointed out. Look, you gotta have really legitimate players to run as much man coverage as they do. And going back and watching it again, the true freshman corner, Leonard Moore, on the outside.
Yeah.
This kid is unreal. I mean, and I know there's other guys that played well. Christian Gray's been good lately. Xavier Watts is always as good, and then run defense. But they got to look, when they lost Ben Morrison for the season, we got concerned. Ben Morrison might be a top 20 pick in the NFL draft, and they stick a true freshman in here in Leonard Moore, and they don't miss a beat. 76.2 coverage grade, 6 targets, 1 catch allowed for 17 yards, and that catch was in the final 2 minutes when the game was already well out of hand. 34 of his 42 coverage snaps in press coverage. True freshman we're talking about against what had been an elite offense for most of the year, right? 84.7 overall grade this season. Right now, 13th among all corners. Leonard Moore is an immediate, just another true freshman superstar in a year full of them outside at corner. This guy we're going to be talking about for the next 2 years and probably in the same light as we've been talking about Ben Morrison, because his career is getting off to just as good a start. And the fact that you could send a true freshman out there to play this much man in a spot like this, it's incredible, and the fact that he thrived is just amazing. Leonard Moore has been such a spark plug for them in their secondary, playing the boundary, playing press man. I mean, it's just incredible, and he had another terrific game.
The fact that you can lose a projected top 20 pick in Ben Morrison for the season and still run the same defense with a true freshman is just a testament to how good that secondary is. I mean, Leonard Moore, you're right. He is a star, and a star that we'll be talking about for at least the next couple seasons of college football. Dolan, a star that we'll be talking about next year, at least probably only next year, because he's going to the NFL, I'd imagine, right after that, is Jeremiah Love, my most impressive part in this game. So he was obviously the highest grade player on 22 snaps. He only played 22 snaps in this game, so an 80.6 grade, but he made his mark on those 22 snaps. 8 carries for 108 yards and a touchdown. He had 114 yards after contact. He had more yards after contact than he had rushing yards in this game. 98-yard touchdown, by far the biggest play of the game and probably one of the biggest plays that we'll see all season, honestly. He broke a tackle on 63% of his carries as well. He caught 2 passes for 18 yards. This season, he has a 92.2 PFF grade. That is 3rd among all running backs in college football. The only ones who had a better grade than him, Ashton Jeanty, Cam Scataboo. Both those guys were in the top 5 of Heisman voting this year. Jeremiah Love is a bona fide superstar. He is, I think without a doubt, the best running back in college football going into next year and a legitimate Heisman candidate. I put out my way too early Heisman finalist predictions during the Heisman ceremony this year. I had Jeremiah Love in the top 4. I really think this guy is that freaking good that Notre Dame could just ride him next year to, again, another great season. He is special, man. He really is. He seemed like he was playing with Indiana at times out there. I remember I turned to you while we were up there in the press box. I was like, dude, a lot of like heat check runs right now. He's like trying to hurdle guys out there. He's stiff-arming guys out there. Some of the greatest like 2-yard gains you'll ever see, honestly. Jeremiah Love, dude, he is so hard to tackle. He's so fast. He's so athletic. He is pretty easily, in my opinion, the best running back in the country going into next year.
He's got a bit of everything, doesn't he? The combination of speed and physicality, I think, absolutely makes that justified going into next year. It's crazy. Look, they're going to, with Riley Leonard gone, they're going to need to figure out the passing game next year. We'll figure out next year, but tell you what, Jeremiah Love, he looks like he won't have any issues running on Georgia, right? I mean, and Georgia's got maybe an even better run defense than Indiana. And Indiana, don't get me wrong, they have a fantastic run defense, and he just kept making it happen after contact, breaking tackles. And they're going to need, you know, I wonder if, you mentioned he only had 8 carries and, what, a handful of catches?
Yeah.
You got to wonder if it was, okay, we got the score where we want it. Next week, dude. Maybe next week we're talking 25, 30 carries for him because they might need it against Georgia, and who knows how low scoring that game is. But we know running the ball is going to be at a premium in that game.
Absolutely. So Notre Dame beating Indiana 27-17 in the battle for the state of Indiana. And Notre Dame now moving on to play number 2 Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. Carson Beckless, Georgia, as well, Dawn. That's going to be a whale of a game that we're going to get in the Sugar Bowl on New Year's Day in a couple weeks. But Notre Dame moves on to play Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. Next game we're talking about, number 6 Penn State destroying number 11 SMU 38-10. And Penn State now moving on to play number 3 Boise State in the Fiesta Bowl. Let's go over the highest graded players, starting off with the Penn State Nittany Lions. Linebacker Tony Rojas had a massive pick 6 in this game. He finished with an 83.1 grade. Another guy had a pick 6. Dominic DeLuca, another linebacker, 79.9. Abdul Carter, 77.9. The edge defender, running back Katron Allen, 74.1. Another linebacker, Kobe King, 71.9. Drew Aller, not his best game, obviously 56.3 grade, but also Penn State didn't really need his best game out there. So we'll see what happens next week. But let's go over to SMU with their highest grade players in their loss. Linebacker Ahmad Walker, 83.3. Brandon Crossley, the cornerback, 71.9. Elijah Roberts, the edge defender, 71.7. Jonathan McGill, the safety, 71.4. Defensive tackle Anthony Booker Jr., 66.6. And Kevin Jennings with a rough one out there, 49.7 grade. Dolan, for you, the stats told the story in this game.
Okay, so I think, you know, you mentioned Aller's grade there being in the 50s, kind of a whatever day, cold weather, missed some throws. Wasn't terrible, but did enough, right, considering the way his defense was playing. And I think Tyler Warren, only had 33 yards in this game himself. So we usually think about, okay, if Tyler Warren only had 33 yards, they might have an issue. But the number is simple for me. Penn State, 209 rushing yards, and we're taking out sacks here, so just don't get it mixed up with whatever other networks have, whatever numbers. We take out the sacks, 209 rushing yards. 9 games this season where Penn State has rushed for at least 200 yards. 38.6 points per game, right where they sat in this game, although 2 touchdowns were on defense, but still it helps. 91.5 rushing grade. 5 games where they rush for less than 200 yards, 25 points per game, 76.7 rushing grade. I think what we have now with Penn State is when Katron Allen and Nick Singleton are both fully healthy and they can split the carries pretty evenly the way that they want to, this is what now this Penn State offense looks like. And this wasn't even their best day, especially in the first half, but you go back to last week against Oregon, even the week before against Maryland, where they just absolutely teed off. Really good game against Oregon. I thought as the game went on and they got into the second half and they kept leaning on Allen and Singleton, it got a lot better. I think we're starting to see this Penn State offense round into the form that they want to. Still going to be some struggle at wide receiver. Eventually that's going to become an issue, whether it's this week against Boise or especially against either Georgia or Notre Dame in the semis. That's going to be an issue of, can you beat man coverage? Because both of those teams are going to go to it. But either way, you only have 2 occasions this year where one of these backs got at least 20 carries. The whole idea of this offense and how Andy Kolonicki runs this run game, on top of all the creativity, is that both of them are always fresh, Allen and Singleton, right? Both of them, if you look at their most yards per carry individually in their best games this season, they have less than 15 carries. It's when they have 12 to 14 apiece, and then Aller gets thrown in and Warren gets thrown in. It used to be Prabula thrown in, but that's not a thing now. These two backs, when they're healthy, when they're rested, when they're not being overused, either one of them, this is what can happen in Penn State's running game. And I think eventually, as this game went on and SMU just kept making mistakes on offense, and obviously the 2 pick sixes and spotting a 14-0 lead helps on defense, this Penn State team with balance in the run game, because it was a stretch in the middle of the year, they didn't have balance like this. Singleton was banged up. right? Allen doesn't, it's not really a 25, 30 carry guy like that. Neither one of them is.
Yeah.
And then they're relying on Aller a little too much and the receivers a little too much. When this Penn State team has balance like this and they can lean into the run game first, they're extremely dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when Drew Aller, like I said, 56.3 grade was not his best stuff out there and just never mattered because they had the running game they can rely on in this one as well. And you're right, you know, that committee backfield for Penn State is dangerous because those guys are fresh the entire game. And obviously the defenses aren't fresh, you know, having to tackle them the entire game. So that leads to a lot of success for Penn State. Really, the Seth told a story for me, Dolan, this defense dominated out there. And Kevin Jennings had a 7.3 passer rating when he was under pressure in this game. 7.3. For reference, if you spike the ball every single play, you get a 39.6 passer rating. His passer rating was 7.3 under pressure. It was awful. He had a 26.8 passing grade under pressure. And coming into the game, Dalton, Kevin Jennings was 7th among all quarterbacks in the nation with a 73 passing grade under pressure. Again, 26.8 in this game. Almost a third of what he's done all season. Under pressure, 6 for 16 for 52 yards. 0 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, both of them return for pick sixes. 0 big time throws, 2 turnover worthy plays as well. And the thing is, he was that bad under pressure, and he was under pressure the entire game. 47% of his dropbacks, he was under pressure in this game. Penn State had 21 points off those turnovers. SMU's allowed 31 points off turnovers all season. Penn State had 21 in this game. Kevin Jennings, and I love him. I think he's actually still a really good quarterback and still going to be one of the top quarterbacks in college football going into next season because he's already announced he's coming back to SMU for another year. But in this game, he was in a blender because of Penn State's blitzes and their pass rush. He never once looked comfortable out there. I think a lot of people said the moment was too big for him. The stadium was going crazy. But that Penn State defense and those blitzes and the pressure they got on him, he couldn't do anything. And this is a quarterback who all year has been so good under pressure. But again, we want to remind you guys, play under pressure is so volatile. There's some games where a guy is amazing under pressure and other games like this one where he's absolutely terrible. You got the bad end for SMU in this game, and Kevin Jennings under pressure was just not nearly good enough for SMU to have a chance at winning this game.
47% obviously is unsustainable. You're not going to win many games when your quarterback's under pressure 47% of the time unless your name is, what, Joe Burrow probably.
Yeah.
That's about it. Look, Jennings was spectacular all year. Coming into the game, he had the 6th best passing grade under pressure in the country. I mean, it's not like a thing other than the Duke game, right? That was really the only terrible game he played all year. This wasn't an issue, and he's really athletic, and he can make all the throws. But you could even see, even before the pick sixes, that first 4th and 1, when they called the play action, and he rolled, and look, there was no issue with throwing the ball there. It worked. The play call worked.
Oh, yeah, it was a good play call.
Wide open, missed the throw.
Yeah.
And you could just feel between that play, because this game might look a whole lot.
It would have been a touchdown.
Yeah. It's going to look a whole lot different if on their first drive SMU goes down and it's 7-0.
Yeah.
Right away, right? And then SMU, they got in the tempo. There were things in this game that worked for SMU on offense, but they couldn't finish drives. And look, any team that scores 2 defensive touchdowns, they're going to win the
backbreaking.
They're going to win the ball game.
Yeah.
Because their defense, honestly, in the first half, they played well. SMU, I think there was parts of this where SMU didn't play as bad as the score might indicate, but turnovers, especially turnovers that turn into touchdowns immediately, that kills you. Jennings can lead them back. He can absolutely lead them back to this spot next year. No, I still have no doubt about his ability or any of that, but I think you mentioned it. This moment in this environment against this defense, and Tom Allen did a fantastic job timing up the blitzes. I mean, honestly, when he saw that the blitz was working, we were stepping on the gas the whole way. And there was you get concerned sometimes with defensive coordinators that get a big lead. They start sitting in too high. They're sitting back. They're just not giving up explosives. Mm-mm. Tom Allen did the right thing. Keep blitzing till it doesn't work. And it honestly never not worked. And he just kept applying pressure. And Jennings, they kept caving under it. Even in the second half where there was moments when SMU got in the red zone, couldn't finish.
Yeah.
You have to finish drives and you can't turn the football over. But I think just like Indiana, I think it's a great learning experience for SMU. They're going to run it back next year with a good team and a good quarterback. And we could very well see them here again.
He's very much a good quarterback. I mean, I would not be surprised when we do our top 10 quarterback rankings going to next year that he's in that list.
Most likely, yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. Just was a rough, rough game. The worst game of his year, I'd probably say, for Kevin Jennings. Most impressive part of this Penn State win, Dalton?
Boy, oh boy. And I know there's all the blitzing and all the fun stuff Tom Allen did that we could break down all day, but it helps to have a number 11 in a Penn State uniform, oh, doesn't it? Abdul Carter just continues to prove why he very well could be edge one in this draft class. 83.1 pass rush grade, 25% win rate, 5 pressures, a sack, drew a holding on another pressure, 92.9 true pass rush grade this season. Second in the country, I believe, behind Josiah Stewart, who's obviously been teeing off all year. He's Abdul Carter. He's going to go top 10 in this draft, right?
He could go top 5.
I mean,
I think top 10 is guaranteed at this point.
The speed, the spin move that he put, I felt so bad for Savion Byrd. Left tackle.
It's a rough assignment.
Maybe as tough assignment as there is in the country right now. Abdul Carter, as an elite player, this is as pure a pass rusher as we have in college football right now, and he's problem number one, even beyond all the blitzing and the linebackers playing great and everything else that Penn State has on defense. Abdul Carter is a game wrecker, and he proved it again here. And I think he's going to continue to prove it for as far as Penn State goes in this.
And I'm so happy that Penn State learned their lesson with Micah Parsons. And listen, Micah Parsons at Penn State was the best linebacker in college football. But whenever he rushed the passer at Penn State, you always like, wait a minute, that's different. Like that, he should be doing that a lot more. And then not playing off ball linebacker. Then he goes to the Dallas Cowboys, plays linebacker, I believe, for what, his rookie year. Then they move him to full time edge defender, and he becomes like one of the best edge rushers in the entire NFL. Abdul Carter, I think you kind of saw the same thing. Again, you wore the same number as Micah Parsons, wore the famous number 11 at Penn State. And he was so good when he was blitzing as a linebacker that you kind of got the same vibes. You're like, okay, he's a really good linebacker, yeah, but man, when he rushed the passer, he's elite. And they said, you know what? We're not going to let him do it in the NFL. We're going to do it his last year of college. And they did it, and he's become the best edge rusher in college football. So, listen, the Micah Parsons comps are obviously very much out there. Like, it's very high praise for Abdul Carter, but you get some of the vibes, though.
It's hard to say they're unwarranted when he comes into playoff games and he plays like this. And I would expect, look, Boise, if they don't run the ball, they get in obvious passing situations next week. Number 11 is going to be an issue because I'm not sure where they have somebody, especially one-on-one, who could block him.
Absolutely, yeah. But my most impressive part, speaking of Micah Parsons, the position he played at Penn State is the Penn State linebacker. So Penn State brands themselves as linebacker U because you have obviously pass grades as LeVar Arrington, Jack Ham, Paul Posluszny, Micah Parsons, Navarro Bowman. The linebackers were the biggest reason for Penn State's dominance yesterday. All of Penn State's linebackers combined for an 86.5 grade against SMU. Both pick sixes were by linebackers in Dominic DeLuca and Tony Rojas. They had a 44.4 passer rating when targeted allowed, all the linebackers combined for Penn State. Dominic DeLuca also had a sack in this game. Kobe King led the way with a 76.6 run defense grade. It wasn't just like one star linebacker for Penn State that went off. The entire group effort led this defense. It's one of the best linebacker units that we have in college football, and all three of them, between Rojas, DeLuca, and even Kobe King, he didn't have a pick six, but he still was very good out there. These Penn State linebackers were amazing yesterday, and I think it was the biggest reason why this defense dominated the way it did.
Absolutely. They play like that, and they could go a long way with this defense. And I'll tell you what, those same three guys, they're going to need them to be great in the next one, for sure. SMU's got a great offense, and you know, Breshard Smith is tough to tackle. Kevin Jennings can be tough to tackle, but you got Ashton Jeanty coming down the pipe. If they play like this against Boise State, they could run them out of the building, honestly. But it's going to be a tougher task than this, because it's not going to be, A, in your home environment in 20-degree weather, and B, that's one of the best college backs we've ever seen coming now. So I think if they do this again in the next game, it'll help a whole lot when it comes to getting into the semis.
And Ashton Jeanty is also eyeing the Barry Sanders rushing record as well. When he's 132 rushing yards to get it.
They're going to take some pride in not letting him do it.
They are going to do everything they can to not let him break that record.
That's
going to
be the battle within the battle.
I love that. That's going to be a great game in the Fiesta Bowl coming up on New Year's Eve. That actually be the first playoff of this first quarterfinal game that we get Penn State and Boise State playing on New Year's Eve. Before we move on to the next game, I want to just shout out the SMU Mustangs. Obviously, their season is over now. But right now, they finished number 8 in the playoff ranking. They'll probably finish around the top 10. Dalton, they have not finished in the top 10 of a ranking since 1984, when they finished number 8 in the country. That was before they got the death penalty. And that death penalty obviously set this program back a very long time. They didn't play football for 2 years because of the death penalty. Now they're, you know, their first year in the ACC. They made the college football playoff in their first year in a Power Four conference in a very, very long time. Obviously, it was a rough performance yesterday, but I just want to shout out Rhett Lashley and SMU for what was a hell of a season for the Mustangs this year.
First year in the Power Four, they made the playoff.
Yeah.
And they were really good last year, but that was always going to be the concern, is could they move up and do it? And then they had the quarterback controversy earlier in the year with Stone and Jennings and the loss to BYU. And, you know, okay, do they deserve to be in the ACC, really? Can they actually compete? And they went out and did it. And I get, look, they didn't have the toughest ACC schedule. They're not to blame for that. That's the blame of these conferences with the unbalanced schedules and having too many teams. They took advantage of the opportunity they had. Obviously, the start of the Clemson game could have gone better, but they came back and at least earned their spot back in here. And, you know, same thing. I don't think there's any reason to think they didn't deserve to be here. Penn State is better than them. I think 10 out of 10 people, including you and me, that's why we picked them, would say Penn State is better than SMU. But I think, again, it's a good learning experience for them, each of these last two games to go. Between Clemson and Penn State, two of the programs that are generally considered elite ones in college football, to go, all right, this is the standard. And we see SMU, they're pouring a boatload of money into this program. They're going out and getting talent, getting in the portal and getting talent. SMU's going to compete in the ACC. And I don't know I don't think, for me, they might not be the favorite walking into next year. We'll see how the rest of the offseason goes, but they're going to be up there. They're going to compete at the top of the ACC with all the resources they have and the foundation that Rhett Lashley set there.
And a great quarterback coming back, and Kevin Jennings as well. And just some historical reference for SMU. Last year, Rhett Lashley's second year as their head coach, they finished number 22 in the country. They have not finished in the top 25 since 1986, which, again, right before they got the death penalty as well. So their last year before the death penalty was when they finished ranked. Since then, in 1986, they have not finished in the top 25 until last year, and then this year they're even higher. So Rhett Lashley is building a really, really good program at SMU, and it's really cool to see SMU back in the limelight again after this program was really, really down in the dumps after that death penalty. And that death penalty happened, 40 years ago now, and it's been rough for them since then. They have really bounced back in a big way, and I'm really excited to see the future of SMU football. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, obviously, rough game again for SMU, rough game for Indiana, but I want to shout out those two schools specifically because this is just really cool stories in college football that unfortunately ended yesterday, but still really cool stories that we saw in college football. Next game we're talking about is maybe the team, Dalton, that you were alluding to, maybe being the favorite in the ACC in Clemson, but they lost to Texas. It was 38-24 final score. Texas moving on to play number 4 Arizona State in the Peach Bowl. Let's go over the highest graded players, starting off with the victorious Texas Longhorns. Highest graded player, tight end Gunnar Helm, 85.2 grade. Cornerback Jadae Barron, 79.2. Leona LaFau, the linebacker, 76.8. Travion Wisner with a 76.5 grade. Running back, safety Andrew Makuba, against his former school in Clemson, played really well with a 76.4 grade. And Quinn Ewers finishing with a 69 grade. Let's go over to Clemson with their highest graded players. Defensive tackle DeMonte Capehart was their highest grade player, 80.1 grade. Another D tackle, Peyton Page, 77.8. Another D tackle, Peter Woods, 77.4. Actually played a lot of edge defender in that game as well. Safety RJ Micken, 75.6. Wide receiver TJ Moore, 74.6. And Cade Klubnik with a 68.2 grade. Dalton, for you, the stat that told the story in this Texas victory.
I think even in a loss, Dabo Swinney is going to feel really good about where his program is.
Oh, yeah. Okay? He should.
Because for a lot of this game, three quarters of it, in fact, Cade Klubnik played really well. Their defense kept them in it. Look, they had a shot. They cut this lead down to 7 in the fourth quarter, right, before Trey Wisner. No, it was Jaden Blue, sorry, with the big run that off the left side behind Kelvin Banks that really put it away. But story of this game for me is that second quarter where Texas established themselves as the better team. The rest of the way, the other three quarters, Clemson actually outscored them 21-17. Second quarter, 21-3 Texas. You're talking about Texas, 5 drives, 3 touchdowns, fluky interception, turnover on downs, Clemson 2 punts, an interception, a field goal after they got an interception on defense in the end of the half, 56.7 offensive grade for Clemson in that second quarter, 76.2 for Texas, 98 yards for Clemson, 214 for Texas. Cade Klubnik, other three quarters, he was fine. Second quarter, 4-for-10, 43 yards, turnover-worthy play, 47 passing grade. I think for Dabo Swinney, he's going to come out of this game, and which is why I thought this was really just getting here, winning the ACC and getting here and getting to play a game like this with such a young team. It was a win-win situation. Because either, hey, you're going to pull a miracle and win at Texas, and everyone's going to go, holy hell, Clemson actually went and did this. or two, you hopefully go out there and play a good football game, which they did for the most part, especially Klubnik. I thought he played his heart out, right? I mean, he had to gunsling it a little bit against one of the best defenses in the country, and he played his heart out. But against with such a young team on his hands, with so many freshmen and sophomores playing, especially on defense, I think the same thing. Dabo can look at his team now and go, listen, we won the conference when we weren't supposed to. We got to play one of probably the four or five best teams in the country, yeah. right? With a top three defense, maybe the best defense in the country. And we played a darn competitive game where for 45 minutes, we were at least equal, if not the better mm-hmm. team. And for 15 minutes, it got away from us. You want to beat a team like that, especially on the road, you got to play a full 60 minutes at this standard. And Texas is one of the standards in college football right now. I think Clemson should actually feel very good about where they are going into next year. And with all the talent they have coming back, especially on defense and even at receiver, I got to feel like they're the favorite to win the ACC again next year. And I know we've said this with Clemson. For a decade, they've really run the ACC outside of a couple of years. But they have a boatload of talent coming back. And I think they certainly could have played a lot worse in this game and caved. They never caved. I don't think they ever caved. Were there times where they didn't execute? They gave up big plays? Sure. But they never caved when it came to the competitiveness of it. And they never just rolled over and said, oh, Texas is just better than us. At no point did they do that. Mistakes and execution beat them in this game, and the fact that they were so young. But I think Dabo's got to feel fantastic with the way his season went, and even especially the way the end of his season went, even in this game.
And they have so many guys coming back guaranteed next year. Another guy that should come back is Kate Klubnik, and if they have him come back as well, this is a dangerous, dangerous football team. And you're right. I mean, listen, I know Indiana lost by 10 and Clemson lost by 14, but I think we can all agree this is the closest game we had in the college football playoff first round.
Yeah, front to back, yeah.
I would say, like, yeah. Clemson had, out of any team that lost, Clemson had the best chance to win out of any of these four teams. So they really did fight in this game, which is really impressive. But, Dolan, the stats told a story for me in this one. So my breakdown of this game, I talk about the massive mismatch between Texas's run scheme, which is a very heavy outside zone, against Clemson defense that has really struggled to contain outside zone this year. Texas averaged 10.8 yards per carry on outside zone runs in this game. It was even worse than I expected going into it. They ran outside zone 23 times yesterday. They had 249 rushing yards and two touchdowns on just one concept, one run concept. They had almost 250 rushing yards and two touchdowns. Both of them were very long touchdown runs as well. 160 yards after contact. They averaged 7 yards after contact per attempt on outside zone runs. And the biggest benefactor was Jaden Blue. He had 8 carries on outside zone runs for 138 yards and two touchdowns with 93 yards after contact. He averaged 17.3 yards per carry on outside zone runs. 17.3 with 11.6 yards after contact per carry. Cameron Williams, and listen, Jaden Blue was outstanding in this as well. Trey Wisner, unfortunately, got hurt in the game. He was really good in outside zone runs. Even Jarrett Gibson had a few carries in outside zone runs. He averaged 5 yards per carry on those runs as well. They were all great. But Cameron Williams, the right tackle, Calvin Banks, the left tackle, and the entire offensive line, honestly, they were kicking ass on outside zone runs, and Clemson could not keep contained if their life depended on it in this one. The defensive line struggled. The linebacker struggled against outside zone. Even some of the safety struggled containing outside zone. Listen, I broke it down. I said this could be a big mismatch, and it was a massive mismatch in this game. I mean, 11 yards per carry and outs on one concept is nuts. And Clemson, the way they're defending that, they had no chance to win this game because of how bad they were defending outside zone runs in this game.
Absolutely. I mean, it's problem number one with Texas run game when you play against them is exactly that. And this game, maybe more than any other this season, reminded me of all the success they had in the same concept with Jonathan Brooks last year, right? And this year, there was times when Texas, especially in the two Georgia games, where their run game kind of failed them a little bit, and you know, and Wisner and Blue, they were trying to figure it out. They lost CJ Baxter, or what, the first game of the season. You know, it's been a bit inconsistent, I think, at times running the ball for Texas. If they run the ball like this and they can stay out of the drop back game and not ask Quinn Ewers to do so much, and, you know, he had a solid game, right, because he wasn't asked to carry them. I think they ran the ball on 2 out of 3 plays in this game. You ask Quinn Ewers to be a complimentary piece with a team running the ball like this and playing defense generally the way Texas plays it, that's when you paint a national title picture for Texas. And I think the big thing now is this status of Cameron Williams, who you mentioned at right tackle as well, as well as Jake Majors at center. But yeah. Steve Sarkisian said he could have put him back in and just held him out to be safe. But Williams is a big one. And him and Kelvin Banks, they were just spectacular in this game off the edges. You mentioned the mismatch between their tackles and Clemson's edge players for the most part running on those outside runs. And I think Texas doing it with two backups in the second half is even more impressive and speaks to the depth of what they have up front. And we keep calling this the best offensive line in college football, and they proved it again.
Yeah, absolutely. So Clemson, Texas dominated on outside zone in this game. Don't forget the most impressive part of this Texas win, though.
I just love watching Gunnar Helm.
Yeah.
I think he's just one of the best tight ends in the country. 6 catches, 77 yards. The touchdown up the seam on what was probably Ewer's best throw of the day in the back of the end zone. A 90.6 receiving grade, and starting to get hot lately the last couple of games. I think, honestly, you know, and with Isaiah Bond out, Helm, I think he's been their most consistent passing weapon all season. I think there are times when, you know, Bond has had his moments. Matt Golden has had his moments. I don't think he had his best game yesterday. I know there was a couple of drops in there. Helm, though, is just so good. He just gets first downs. He just makes plays, doesn't he? He just is one of these guys where you go, man, you almost forget about him. And then right when you forget about him, he comes back and makes another big play for this offense. I think he's a real mismatch, and I think he's a guy we're going to talk about all through the draft season as well. It's a really good group of tight ends, and he's another one. But I think he's been so consistent this year, and he was great again in this game. He just gives them this piece, this safe piece to throw to, as opposed to, you know, like last year where used to Texas throwing it way downfield. The deep ball hasn't been there as much for Texas this year. It's been guys like Gunnar Helm moving the chains and keeping them on schedule along with the run game that's made this offense really good. I thought he was just spectacular again.
Yeah, he was really good, and he's a guy that really helps out Quinn Ewers as well, right? Like I said, doesn't have to throw deep every time. And I think this is a big game for Texas to show, hey, we don't need Quinn Ewers to carry this offense, right? We can have a guy like Gunnar Helm be our best weapon. We can have the run game dominate as well. There might come a game, there probably will come a game, as long as they keep winning, where Quinn Ewers has to be the guy for them. But not yet, right? They can win off a great defense, and they can win off Gunnar Helm and a great run game as well. And a part of that great defense, Dolan, is Jahdae Barron. My most impressive part, he showed why he was a Jim Thorpe Award winner, which was given out to the best defensive back in college football, and why he's been the best corner in the country this year. He had an 80.7 coverage grade against Clemson, 3 catches allowed on 7 targets for 17 yards. He had 3 forced incompletions, as the same amount as he had allowed catches in this game. So 3 forced incompletions and 3 allowed catches. Also, the same amount of blitz a couple times. He had a pressure in this game as well against Kate Klubnik. 90.8 grade this year, the best in the nation among all corners. 91.5 coverage grade, best in the nation among all corners. Texas has the best secondary in America, bar none. And Jahdae Barron is the biggest reason why. So he was outstanding. He was actually following a lot of Clemson's top receivers out there. It wasn't like he was just playing one side of the field. He was moving to slot a little bit, playing on the outside. He just kind of knew which guy would be targeted on every play. He's like, I'm covering that guy. That's my guy in this play. So Jahdae Barron, in my opinion, has been the best defensive back that we've had in college football. And big reason why Texas has the best secondary in the country alongside Makuba, Malik Muhammad, Michael Taft as well. I mean, they have a nasty secondary, but Jahdae Barron's the star of it.
This defense is absolutely loaded. It's unreal. I'm looking at all the grades.
Every level.
Now. At every level.
Anthony Hill and Alfred Collins.
Baron Sorrell. I thought was fantastic yesterday. Texas, it's a weird read because I think there are times where they look like the best team in the country. They may even be the most talented team in the country.
Yeah.
It's the quarterback issue, and if he can get them through some sort of hard time. And maybe it's just a mental block with Georgia. Maybe it's just Kirby Smart. Maybe they just have to get through this run and get to the end, and hopefully they're not playing Georgia. And we'll see how they look against Arizona State. I think playing in the trenches on both sides of the ball the way that they played in this game, I would feel extremely good if I were Texas going up against Arizona State, because I think that's where the biggest mismatch is, right? I think we know Sam Levitt's really good. We know Cam Scadaboo is incredible, right? We know their defense has been a lot better. But at the end of the day, that's where I would feel the most comfortable. O-line and D. Here's a question for you. Both offensive line and defensive line. Is there anybody better with a combination of those two things?
In the trenches, probably not. No,
because I mean, Oregon's got a good argument. Ohio State's banged up on one side. I think Penn State, D line's great. O line,
Yeah, Michigan's great D line, but the O line is issues.
I don't know that there's a better team with a combination of the two. And when you can control the game in the trenches the way that they do on both sides of the ball, you can beat anybody. I think the way they played, especially on their offensive line, is it's insane. I'll run, pass, whatever you want. I think that's the biggest concern for me for Arizona State with playing Texas next week is, boy, if Texas gets in the run game like this on a weekly basis now, I think the rest of the teams in this field left have a serious problem.
Yeah.
And I think if we get Texas in a semi against Oregon or Ohio State, Texas could absolutely win against either of them. I mean, playing the way they played in this game. And again, I thought Clemson probably played about as good a game as they could have. And Texas, at the end of the day, O-line and D-line, they had all the answers.
Yeah. No, I would agree with you. I think they're probably the best in the trenches that we have in college football. And we haven't even mentioned, like,
on top of the best secondary in college.
On top of the best secondary, yeah.
Yeah.
It's stupid. And I haven't mentioned, like, Colin Simmons on the D-line as well. Like, disgusting true freshman they have as well. So, yeah, O-line, I think, is the best in the country. They have one of the best defensive lines in the country as well. I think Texas, just in the trenches, is the best in the nation. Like you said, it's a great point by you. And also the secondary is just really good as well. But Texas moving on to play Arizona State in the Peach Bowl with a 38-24 win over Clemson. All right, next game we're talking about, the final one we're talking about, number 8 Ohio State destroying number 9 Tennessee, kind of putting a statement out to the rest of college football with a 42-17 win. Everyone thought this would be by far the best game of the night. After these three games, we're at least looking at each other saying, hey, we've got Ohio State Tennessee coming up, and this is a slaughter out there. Ohio State moving on to play number 1 Oregon in the Rose Bowl in what is a rematch of what was one of the best games of the college football season. But we're not talking about that just yet. We'll talk about that in our preview show later on. We're going to talk about this game first. Let's go over the grades, starting off with the Ohio State Buckeyes. Edge defender JT Tuimoloau, 88.1 grade. Running back Travion Henderson, 84.2. Offensive tackle Donovan Jackson, 79.3 grade, kind of playing a little opposition. Usually the guard for Ohio State, now playing left tackle because of all the injuries. Wide receiver Emeka Egbuka, 77.3. Edge defender Jack Sawyer, 75.9. And the highest graded player was Will Howard with an 89.5 grade for Ohio State in the win. Let's go over to Tennessee with their highest graded players, starting off with James Pierce Jr., 74.1 grade for the projected top 15 pick in the NFL draft. Peyton Lewis, the running back, 67 grade. Cooper Mays, the center, 66.6. Boo Carter, the corner, 66. Jeremiah Talander with a 65.1 grade, the linebacker. And Nico Iamaliava with a 59.5 grade, 30 points fewer than what Will Howard put up in this one. Dawn, for you, these stats told a story in this game.
Okay, so between we know this year, with Nico being as young as he is and still developing, Tennessee is not a team that wants to just drop back and throw the football, right? They want Dylan Sampson to get going. They want to get those quick throws outside and then maybe the occasional shot over the middle and have Nico play a complimentary role. Between Ohio State getting the big lead, Dylan Sampson getting hurt, I think he only had 2 carries in this game, and just the entire way the first half of this game went, Tennessee got out of their element on offense. This is not what they wanted to be. This is not the Hendon Hooker Tennessee Volunteers where they can line up and throw it 50 times, and it's not how they win. They have to manufacture offense. In this game, negative 0.608 EPA per pass, which for reference, over a whole season would be by far the worst in the country if you did that for a whole year. That's essentially the level they played at. The worst EPA per pass since Josh Heupel became the head coach in 2021. Ugh. 3.4 yards per attempt, also the lowest under Josh Heupel since he got hired in 2021. And I think, again, it speaks to the dropback game not being where they want, but when you're down 21-0, this is where you end up. Nico, 47.4 passing grade without play action in this game. They just, Ohio State getting the early lead, being able to pin their ears back, making Iamaliava beat them, and then Dylan Sampson getting hurt made it even worse. Tennessee, there wasn't a scenario against this defense where they were going to fall behind 21-0 and win.
Yeah.
And Ohio State did a spectacular job getting ahead, making them throw the ball when they weren't comfortable throwing it, and making Nico uncomfortable in the pocket. 14 times he was under pressure, 4 incompletions, 4 sacks, 6 scrambles. Not a single completion under pressure in this game against this defense. I think, look, Ohio State, you mentioned it, they reasserted themselves in the national title picture. I actually think I saw an early betting line that has them favored over Oregon in the Rose Bowl now.
Wow. Wow.
You're about to dig into Will Howard and what he's done, but this was to me about Ohio State with that quick start, getting ahead, making Tennessee throw the ball on offense, which actually isn't what they want to do this year. Maybe next year with a year older Nico and maybe some more weapons in there, but this was a team that wanted to run the ball and play good defense, and they didn't start out playing good defense. They didn't get to run the ball, and it was the toughest passing day that they've had under Josh Heupel as their head coach.
Yeah, the Dylan Sampson injury just killed that offense, right? They just, when he went down, it just was like they can't do anything else.
Yeah, because I mean, and this is another one, and we're gonna dig in. I think in all four of these games, the better team in the trenches won the game.
Yeah.
I think that's a fact in all four, but this game maybe more so than any of them.
And a shocking development. I'll get into the most impressive and one of them aspects of that. But I want to talk about Will Howard for a little bit. I could have gone him for most impressive as well, Don. 89.5 PFF grade. Career high. Career high for Will Howard in this game. And Dalton, the last game he played was against Michigan. He had a 45.1 grade against Michigan in that game. That's the lowest second lowest of his career, and his lowest over the last three seasons, for whether it be 2024 at Ohio State or 2023 and 2022 at Kansas State. He has not had a game that bad. He was horrible against Michigan. So many people were selling their stock on Will Howard, and he goes up against another elite defense in Tennessee, and he responds with a career-best performance against the Volunteers. He had three big-time throws, zero turnover-worthy plays. He averaged 10.7 yards per pass in this game. Every time he dropped back, he was getting a first down for Ohio State. 88.9% adjusted completion rate, which is basically your completion percentage plus any drops your receivers had. So he was on target for 89% of his throws. He was throwing the ball downfield as well. He had 80-plus grades when he was kept clean and when he was under pressure in this game. Tennessee, on the other side, lowest graded defensive performance of the season. It's 11 more points they've given up all year. Howard was dealing in this game, and what a bounce back for him after a horrible performance against Michigan in that final regular season game. And a few weeks later, he goes up against Tennessee, another elite defense. A lot of people were worried about him because of how bad he played against Michigan, and he was stellar in this game for the Buckeyes. So want to shout out Will Howard, man. He was awesome in this game. He has been excellent all year. I think he's getting a lot of unnecessary hate from a lot of people. He shut up a lot of people in this game. And Dalton, I'm going to say it again. I said it after the Oregon game, I believe. He is absolutely capable of winning a national championship. That was the question for Ohio State going into the year was, yeah, this roster is loaded, but do they have the quarterback? They got the quarterback. Will Howard is capable of winning a national title. Now, will he carry the team to a national title? Probably not, but he is absolutely capable of being a starting quarterback on a national championship winning team because of these kinds of performances. He was the best player on the field in the Oregon game. He was the best player on the field in this Tennessee game as well. In the biggest games besides the Michigan game, he has showed up for Ohio State. I want to shout out Will Howard because he was outstanding in this game. A career best performance for Will Howard against Tennessee.
Couple of things I want to point out with him. Aside from the Michigan game, let's go with his most recent four games outside of that game. Passing grades. 90.3, mm-hmm. 85.1, 85.3, 86.9. So aside from the Michigan game down the stretch here, he's played like arguably the best quarterback in the country. 9 big-time throws, no turnover-worthy plays in those four games. And I think the one thing I really liked in this game, if you're going to have a struggling offensive line, and I know Donovan Jackson graded high, and that's fantastic, but he's going to play well at left tackle. That's terrific, okay, especially against a D-line like this. If you're going to have a struggling offensive line, you have to get a little bit creative. I thought Chip Kelly got more creative in the run game, kind of using some looks in the old, you know, up front to get linebackers moving and maybe kind of even use them as a decoy with some concepts. But I think a big thing too is we've seen Ohio State for weeks now. We've seen it twice live. Get the ball to the perimeter. Let the athletes be the athletes in space, right? They are not going to line up and run downhill on elite teams in college football with this offensive line. Luckily, they didn't ask them to do that very often in this game, right? So I think you have it where, and we've seen too, Chip Kelly, sometimes he would kind of wait, right? He'd kind of wait till halfway through the second quarter to get into that. He went right off rip in this game.
Yeah.
We're going to go fast. We're going to get the ball to the perimeter. We're going to throw go balls to Jeremiah Smith. We're going to run screens. We're going to do everything we can to protect this offensive line. Because that's still, we're going to say it every week, it's their biggest weakness. If they can play reasonably well, they can win a national title. They played reasonably well in this game. They worked around him a lot with the play calling. And Will Howard, 2.52 average time to throw, second lowest of the season. That helps. If you're a quarterback sitting in the pocket and your offensive line is struggling, the best thing you can do is protect yourself. He did that in this game. The play calling, I thought Chip Kelly, you could argue front to back, it was the best game he called all year. The one unlucky interception that Jeremiah Smith may or may not have been interfered with, that was the only thing that really went wrong for Ohio State offensively in this game. Howard was terrific. They were fantastic in the trenches. The play calling was great, especially against this defense. You get all the believers coming back to Ohio State after a game like this, that's for sure.
Absolutely. And those receivers for Ohio State were ridiculous as well. And Jeremiah Smith, alien, man. That guy's an alien. I don't know if you saw his tweet afterwards, but so PFF College, Brandon Lee does a great job running the PFF College account, but he put out a tweet of a couple days ago saying, putting out Jeremiah Smith stats and putting out Jermond McCoy stats and saying, who wins this matchup? Because obviously it's an awesome matchup. And obviously Jeremiah got the better of him in that one. Jeremiah, after the game, quote tweeted that graphic and said, yeah, all right. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead. He was talking his shit afterwards, which he deserved it. He played his heart out and he was unreal.
If he was eligible this year, there's a very good chance he'd be the first receiver taken.
Would he go? I heard a lot of people say he'd be the number one overall pick. Would he go over Travis Hunter? That one's tough. That one I don't know. Tough. I don't think I would.
That's the only argument. It's the only argument we're talking about. Other than obviously the quarterbacks being what they are because they're quarterbacks. But no, I think that's what you're talking about right now is just a freak of nature.
A 19-year-old that we're talking about. Okay, he's a number one overall pick.
A kid that we're talking about on the Julio Jones, AJ Green level of talent.
He's baby Julio.
It's insane. I mean, it doesn't even. We don't even have to mention the true freshman thing anymore because he's just at any given moment he could just take a go ball and be the best player on the field, and that's just
And what's scary is we still have two more years of this.
Yeah.
Two more.
I don't even know what the better version of this looks like. What
terrifying.
An improved 20-year-old version of this looks like.
I've heard so many stories about Jeremiah Smith about how he is the hardest worker in the building. There was a story they said in the broadcast yesterday where they said Ohio State coaches had to tell him to stop. They're like, dude, you can't do this anymore. Like, you cannot be, because after practice, he would stay so long after practice, still working out, still trying to get better. Ohio State coaches literally told him, go home. You cannot, we can't have you do, we might be breaking enough rules having you practice this much out here. This kid just wants to be the greatest. And he is the highest rated wide receiver to ever come out of high school. He is now in his true freshman season at Ohio State. I would say going into next year, he's the best receiver in college football going into next year as a true sophomore, which is nuts.
I'm not sure it's close.
No, I don't think it's close either. He was a generational recruit coming out of high school, and we're starting to see a generational type receiver in college in his first year of college football. This kid is so special, and the fact that he's so special with all those athletic gifts and he's the hardest worker in the building, there is no ceiling for this kid. There is zero ceiling for Jeremiah Smith. He is an absolute superstar, and he's still got two more years of college football. This kid's 19 years old, just embarrassing future first-round picks out there. He's 19 years old doing this. He is a truly special talent, and I'm sure a lot of college football fans, including me as a lifelong Penn State fan, am just so annoyed that Ohio State loses one generational wide receiver in Marvin Harrison Jr., and they bring in another one the very next year.
All the other ones.
And after all the other ones.
And Wilson and Everett Smith and Jigba and all the – yeah.
As Ibuka, you can put it – yeah.
As if, you know, when we said, oh, how could they possibly keep doing this, and they find it maybe one that's better than all of them.
Exactly. The fact that Emeka Ibuka is going to be probably a top 20, top 25 pick in the NFL draft, and he's so – as a senior, he's 3 years older than Jeremiah Smith, and he's so clearly the Robin to his Batman. It's just like, this is just stupid.
As good a Robin as you could have.
As good of a Robin as you can get. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, just shout out Jeremiah Smith because he is just ridiculous. But Will Howard, obviously, unbelievable. Dawn, for you, the most impressive part, though, of Ohio State's win.
We kind of each have a side of this because coming into it, I think we both believed that this game was going to be won in the trenches with whichever offensive line. It was the game of whose offensive line is going to cave. That'll be the team that loses. And look, the most impressive part to me, I'll take Ohio State's defensive line. You mentioned Tua Moloau, Jack Sawyer. Tyleek Williams was fantastic in this game, too. He was just terrific. Tua Moloau, 90.4 pass rush grade, 4 pressures, 2 sacks, a batted pass. Pretty good night. Sawyer, 74.5 pass rush grade, 5 pressures, 2 sacks, 2 batted passes. Pretty good night. Tyleek Williams was their best run defender inside on the night, 76.6 run D grade. That's what you pay him for. That's what you pay Tyleek Williams for, is to stop the run. That's what he'll get paid to do in the NFL, along with 5 pressures those three guys, I want to just talk about this starting four. Okay, mm-hmm. Those three guys plus Ty Hamilton inside with Williams combined for an 81.8 overall grade. Second best by those four specific guys this season. The only game they were better was the Iowa game where they just absolutely dominated on defense. 15 combined pressures, 5 sacks between them, most on both totals all season. We talk about, again, we've talked about all year, Ohio State's got one of the best D-lines in the country. I'd say probably Michigan's the best one. They've proven that. Michigan, Ohio State, we talked about Miami. There's been some other. Tennessee's had a really good one all year, although not quite in this game as dominant. This starting four for Ohio State, it's a problem.
Oh, yeah.
I don't care who they're playing. I don't care. This is one of the few defensive lines, and Oregon's got a great O-line, too. This is one of the few defensive line that's I believe, could give Texas.
Oh, easily.
With the best O-line in the country. Yeah. If we ever got that matchup, I mean, that's just popcorn. Yeah, I mean, it's this D-line. Ohio State, you got the other side. They dominated this game on both sides in the trenches and this front four on defense. And I know they've got a bunch of other stars and Downs and Ransom and Cody Simon and all those guys. But, man, it starts up front. And they, again, in a game of which offensive line was going to cave, these four guys caved in Tennessee's offensive line all night.
And at least we expected that, though. We expected Ohio State's defensive line because we knew all year they've been dominant, and we knew Tennessee's offensive line has not been that good. And we said, okay, this could be a big mismatch. And it was. Another side, Dolan, we thought the Tennessee defensive line over the Ohio State offensive line would be the mismatch, and Ohio State's offensive line came to play. They really came to play in this one. And why a lot of people, including you, thought Tennessee would win this game was because of the defensive line over offensive line advantage they had. Ohio State's front five heard all the noise from this show, from everyone else in college football media as well, and they responded with one of their best performances of the year. They had a 75.8 offensive line grade in this game. The fifth best offensive line grade that Ohio State's had all year, and their highest since Josh Simmons went down with his knee injury back in week 7. The only game against a power 4 opponent where Ohio State had a higher offensive line grade was early in the season when they beat Iowa. So this is their second best performance along the offensive line against a power 4 team all year for the offensive line. 75.2 run blocking grade is the best by Ohio State's offensive line in a game against a power 4 opponent. And once again, Tennessee's got one of the best run defenses in college football as well. 0 sacks, 0 hits, 5 pressures allowed on 33 pass blocking snaps. And again, want to remind you guys, this is against one of the best defensive lines in America. Dawn, if their offensive line, and I know Chip Kelly, did a great job of scheming around it and did a great job kind of masking some of it, but at the same time, they came to play as well. If their offensive line keeps playing like this, how do you beat them? I don't know how you beat Ohio State, honestly. I think this is probably the best roster in the country if the offensive line keeps playing like this, and they could very well win it all, because if you don't have a bad offensive line like Ohio State's had in a lot of games this year, I just don't know how you beat them, honestly. So Ohio State's offensive line wanted to shout them out because they came to play against one of the best D-lines in the country in a matchup that everyone, including us, thought would be a massive advantage for Tennessee, and Ohio State's offensive line responded with one of the best performances of the year.
I think considering the opponent, and we know some of the grades get tilted when you play Akron and Marshall and teams like that, it gets tilted. I think considering the opponent, the way they played, the dominant start especially, and then what you just said about the offensive line, this was the best game Ohio State played all season.
Yeah, I would agree.
Both sides of the ball. I know they were better. They were the better team against Indiana. I know this. You know, the Iowa game, they really dominated that game. I think this was the best game they played all year on both sides of the ball. And I think actually that's something that needs to be said more. I think you could argue all four teams that won this weekend, considering the opponent level of dominance. You know, Texas, tiny bit shakier against Clemson, but I think honestly that was just Cade Klubnik playing up at times. I think you could argue that all four of these teams played their best game of the season.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, maybe some people with Texas will point to the Florida game, but there was a third-string quarterback in there who shouldn't have been playing.
No.
Right?
No. So I would say Clemson's more impressive. Yeah.
Right. I mean, I think that's what it comes down to this weekend more, is the four home teams, and home field advantage certainly was maybe something I didn't factor in as much as I should have when you consider the environments we're playing in here, although there was a boatload of orange in that stadium last night. But I think Ohio State, I think all four of these teams that won, the way they played, you could sit here and go, maybe they could win a national title. Yeah.
Can I say the one thing I'll say with the home field advantage for Ohio State? I almost think, and it sounds weird, I almost think they liked it.
I think was it Ryan Day or who was it that said something like that? Ohio State against the world.
And they needed that, dude. I think if they had their entire fan base around them, obviously you mentioned the nervous energy. Tennessee fans, like pregame, were like mocking them in the pregame walk up to the stadium that obviously is really dominated by Ohio State fans. It was taken over by Tennessee fans. I think that Ohio State liked having basically a road environment in that stadium. Again, it's that mentality of it's us against the world. And after that Michigan game, it really was them against the world. And I think they just took that and they played pissed off. You could tell they were playing pissed off against Tennessee. I think they, even though it's weird to say, oh, having your stadium almost taken over by the opposing team fans is a good thing. I almost think Ohio State's team almost kind of liked it a little bit, kind of getting that mentality of, hey, you know what, fuck that. We're going to go out there and prove that we're the best team in the country.
That's exactly what it was. And now we get all the way back full circle to the rematch.
Oh, yeah.
Of what was maybe the best game of the season the first time they played in a game that Ohio State, I'm sure, feels like they should have won. So, look, Oregon's had all this time to prepare. Ohio State has a boatload of talent. It could once again be the game of the year. Out in the Rose Bowl, of course, which is just classic. And, of course, we get back to, what is it, Big Ten versus Pac-12 now?
Yep.
I like it as it should be. Everything works as it should be, right?
Yeah.
I think we got a great quarterfinal coming up. I think all four of these games have a ton of intrigue. But this one, I think the Ohio State game this week was the crown jewel of it. And I know Notre Dame and Georgia's really good. But to get the Ohio State-Oregon rematch that even way back in the preseason we thought these teams could play two or even three times, we're getting it again. And I think going back, for me, going back and watching the first one again and watching all the elements of that and seeing what we can parse from that, it's going to be a ton of fun to prepare for, and it's going to be a ton of fun to watch.
I cannot wait. So I remind you guys, we got that wraps up our review show. We got our quarterfinal preview coming on Saturday at 9 a.m. Eastern time. We're not doing a preview show on Christmas Eve. We're not going to be doing that. I'll be back in Jersey actually tonight, actually. So we're doing our preview show on Saturday. Also, the games are on Tuesday and Wednesday, too. So we got a little bit more time before those games happen as well. So Saturday, 9 a.m. Eastern time is when we'll be doing our quarterfinal preview show between Boise State and Penn State in the Fiesta Bowl, Arizona State against Texas in the Peach Bowl, Oregon against Ohio State in the Rose Bowl, and Georgia against Notre Dame in the Sugar Bowl. Those four quarterfinal games, we'll be previewing them on Saturday at 9 a.m. Eastern time. I want to wish all you guys a happy holidays, and we've got a lot of great college football to go in getting into the quarterfinal round. But I want to thank our producers back there, Eli and Tyler. For Dalton Wassman, I'm Max Chadwick. We'll see you guys on Saturday at 9 a.m. Eastern time for our quarterfinal preview show.